There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Welcome to today's WCN TV program. We're broadcasting live. It's Tuesday, April 15th, 2025. April 15th is historically not a good day. In 1865, Abraham Lincoln died on April 15th after being shot the night before. In 1912, the Titanic sank on April 15th after hitting an iceberg the night before. And in 1955, April 15th officially became tax day here in America after the government did us a favor. And, you know, of course, this was for our benefit and convenience. They extended the tax filing date from March 15th to April 15th because the American tax laws had become so complex. Well, we're blessed today to have Alex Newman with us to discuss the topic of taxes. And I know you're all eager to see him. But first off, today, I'd like to start with a short video. Now, disclaimer here, I'm not endorsing George Harrison or the Beatles by playing this, but in 1966, George got this one right when the Beatles released this song. Let's listen, and I even found a video with the lyrics included so that you can read along and understand what they're saying. Let's take a look.
One, two, three, four, one, two.
Let me tell you.
You can figure that out, Spencer. Some things never change, do they? Today, the tax man continues to make sure that we understand that we are working for no one but him. Just a couple things I should point out that I bet you weren't aware of. In the song, they mention, if 5% appears too small, be thankful I don't take it all. This was actually the truth. As the Beatles began making money in the music business, they were paying 95% of their income in taxes to the British government. They really were only allowed to keep 5% of what they earned. Also in the song, they mention Mr. Wilson and Mr. Heath. Wilson was the British Prime Minister at the time from the Labour Party, who instituted their progressive tax system. And Heath was the leader of the Conservative Party, which went along with this obscene taxation. So now when you hear them mention Mr. Heath and Mr. Wilson, now you know who they're talking about. All right, so enough of that. Let's welcome Alex Newman. Alex, thanks for being with us today, and welcome to WCN-TV.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Well, you know, it seems like taxes have been with us forever. A lot of people think we didn't have federal income tax until 1913, but it actually started much earlier. For instance, there was a federal income tax during the Civil War, but I bet you can probably take us back even further than that, can't you?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's worthwhile going all the way back to 1 Samuel. In 1 Samuel, God's people are asking for a king. They want to be like all the other nations. And Samuel has a really powerful warning for them. He starts in verse 10, I believe, giving God's warning to, so this is 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 10. And Samuel warns God's people about what a king would do to them. And I read this and I have to laugh because Samuel's warning, I mean, he warns about a lot of things that this king will do, but one of the really serious threats is he's going to take a tenth of your stuff. Okay. Wow. A whole tenth of your harvest. He's going to take a tenth of your animals. And that's supposed to be really scary, right? Today, depending on whose numbers you believe, the average American pays over 50% of what they produce in taxes between federal, state, and local. And, what Samuel was threatening them with actually seems very reasonable by comparison. But the history of income taxes in the United States is long. You're right. It didn't start in 1913, although those were the ones that really stuck, because the Supreme Court repeatedly ruled that the federal government was not allowed to impose unapportioned direct taxes on people because the Constitution didn't give the Congress that power. And so it wasn't until the alleged ratification of the 16th Amendment that Congress was then able to go ahead and directly tax the income of Americans. And there are questions about that alleged ratification, but the reality is the IRS has all the guns and they will throw you in a cage if you don't comply. So,
absolutely. By the way, I should mention that Bill Federer sent out an email today on taxes. Bill Federer from the American Minute, and it's very intense and inclusive, and anything that you wanted to know about taxes is in there. So if you're not on his mailing list, you can probably find it at his website, but get on his mailing list. He's got a lot of good stuff. But anyway, we know that citizens need to contribute something to the operation of the government, but really has gotten out of control. Federal income tax alone is now 10% for those living in poverty. And by that, I mean under $10,000 a year, they still pay 10%, all the way up to 37% for those making more. And that's just the federal income tax. We pay taxes on the money we earn, taxes on the money we spend, taxes on things we own that we already paid taxes on with already taxed money. Our government is irresponsible enough to be in the business of forcibly extracting so much money from people, and they still come out bankrupt. It's crazy.
It really is. And I don't know if you were planning to talk about this, Rob, but we're now moving very rapidly toward international taxes. I just did a hugely significant article last week. The UN just approved, literally on Friday, they announced that they had approved the first ever global tax. And it's kind of an indirect tax. I mean, they're not going to suck it right out of your bank account, but you're going to pay it. It's a tax on international shipping. And to the extent that there has been any discussion about this, oh, well, Americans are going to pay more than their fair share because we import so much. Yeah, folks, you're missing the point, right? Here we have a wannabe global government made up of dictators, autocrats, kleptocrats, and various other nefarious characters now able to tax all of humanity. So we're facing a really significant problem with these taxes at every level. And
individual countries need to sign on to that in order to comply?
Well, you would think so, yes. But all the governments agreed by consensus last week at this meeting, and the final approval will be made in October. And unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we have heard nothing from the Trump administration about this so far. This is coming through the International Maritime Organization, a relatively obscure UN agency. And the taxes will start relatively small. These people are talking about raising $100 billion a year, which when you compare that to the federal government, it's a drop in the bucket. But if they can tax shipping to save the world from global warming, they can tax aviation. They can tax stock transactions. And eventually, they'll be able to tax income. So we are about to be in a situation that's drastically more dire than the one we already find ourselves in. You're right. No matter how much they tax us, they always seem to be running deficits. I don't know how deep you want to go into this. We're in a very precarious situation where if the government were to stop spending so much money, which it has to do, the economy would collapse. And you know, the taxation system is intimately connected to the monetary system. We operate under a scam monetary system that requires it. I mean, it is the very essence of dishonest weights and measures, where you have a private cartel of banks masquerading as a federal agency, the Federal Reserve System. And these are private banks. I've called them myself and asked them. They are private banks owned by their member banks. They have a monopoly on the creation of currency and credit, just like Karl Marx advocated in the Communist Manifesto as one of the 10 planks, along with the progressive income tax. And they're in a situation now where to bring money into the economy, the Federal Reserve has to create it. But they don't just create it and spend it, usually. Usually, they lend it to the federal government at interest. And so when the federal government collects the money necessary to pay back all those treasury bonds that it used to get the money from the Federal Reserve in the first place, they can collect the principal, but then we still owe them interest. So we're in a catch-22 here. If the federal government were to pay all this money back, there would not be enough money to actually pay back everything that's owed. So this is actually a very complicated issue, Robin. I think that's why people don't understand it. People's eyes glaze over because there's so many complexities to it. Yes, the taxation system is a total, total ripoff, but it complements and is actually an essential part of the bigger scam, which is the monetary system. And now we're moving that from the federal level up to the international level. And that's going to be a long-term process. They're talking about turning the International Monetary Fund into the kind of global central bank. And then the UN will start collecting taxes on, for example, shipping to transfer that wealth from nations and really from the middle class in the Western world up to the international level, where they'll do just like our federal government. They'll spend it on endless wars. They'll spend it on police. They'll spend it on propaganda. They'll spend it on kangaroo courts to prosecute people who disagree with them. So there's like layers upon layers of problems here under the banner of, you know, the taxation issue, and huge issue that we really need to, as Americans and as Christians, be thinking about.
Well, if you had told me 5 years ago that this about this UN global tax, I would have said that's never going to happen. But nothing is going to surprise me anymore, truly. Well, let's just look at some of the taxes that we do pay here in America right now. We've got property, in addition to the federal income tax, we have property tax, sales tax, state income tax, marriage license fees, public school taxes, vehicle registration taxes, business permit fees, estate taxes, dog license fees, driver's license fees, vehicle registration fees, gasoline taxes, gift taxes, social security taxes, unemployment taxes, self-employment taxes, hotel taxes, license plate fees, Medicare taxes, utility taxes, and sports stadium taxes, to name just a few. Sports stadium, we built a new stadium for the Brewers here. I think it was back in the 80s, might have been early 90s, I don't remember. But it was only a few select counties that agreed to do this. And actually, it was more than a few. It was most of our counties agreed to do this. And they tacked on a 0.5% interest, a 0.5% on the sales tax. And it was going to be temporary just until the thing was built. Well, that's been mid-1980s now, and we're still paying that extra half percent. Taxes do not go away, do they, Alex?
No, they don't. As Ronald Reagan said, the closest thing to eternal life on this side of heaven is a government program, and that very much includes taxation. And part of the problem here, I mean, if we're going to get to the root of it, is that Americans, and in particular American Christians, have lost sight of the purpose of government. We have essentially agreed to, I don't mean me and you, Rob, I mean, as Americans, generally speaking, we have agreed that the government can do essentially whatever it thinks is in our best interest. Now, God is the creator of civil government, and he told us very clearly what it was for. It was to punish evil. And that's not something that we get to define. God has already defined evil for us, rape, murder, slavery, things like this. And so that's all spelled out very clearly in the scriptures. In fact, the Bible teaches more about government than it does about heaven, which always surprises people. And when you have a government that sticks to doing what it's supposed to be doing, punishing murderers, rapists, etc., or as the founding fathers explained, protecting the God-given rights of the people, which is just a restating of what the Bible teaches, just from the other side, right? God said, thou shalt not murder, therefore you have a right to life. God said government must punish evil. Murder is evil, therefore government must help you punish murderers and protect your right to life. These are biblical ideas. And when you have a government that follows the biblical understanding of government, as Jesus said, among you, you should be, if you want to be great among people, you should be a servant, not like among the pagans, among the nations, among the heathens, where you're going to lord it over people. And so when you have a government that focuses on why God instituted government, punishing evil, it's going to be very small. And frankly, I wouldn't be opposed to paying a small tax to make sure that we have an elected sheriff who can go out and punish or arrest people who are perpetrating evil, murder, theft, rape, etc. We would have very, very low taxes. Unfortunately, since we have lost sight of why God created government in the first place, now we say, oh, well, the government should educate my children. The government should give me free health care. You know, my neighbor's got a nicer car than me, and that's not fair. I think the government should take money from him and give it to me. Actually, that's called stealing, right? Thou shalt not steal. And so we are now in this crazy period where government essentially can usurp any power it wants. We're watching it now usurping power over the family. We're watching it now usurping power over the church. We're watching it now usurp power over the individual to the point where they want to tell you what concoctions you need to inject into your bloodstream if you want to be able to work or go outside. So we have completely lost sight of why God instituted government. And that is what has led to this exorbitant taxation. And you just went through some of the examples to where, again, depending on what state you live in and whose numbers you're looking at, more than half of all the value, all the wealth that you produce is going to be absorbed by and wasted by, or in some cases worse than waste, by the government.
Yes, and it drives me crazy, and they are very sneaky about it. They're very clever. They deduct the taxes out of your paycheck, so you never miss what you never see, right? But those of us who are self-employed pay quarterly, and then if you happen to not pay enough quarterly, then you pay again on tax day, which always happens to me. So I hate the tax man. I'm sorry, you're not supposed to hate, but the tax man has no love. I have no love for the tax man. Anyway, so we now have DOGE exposing and supposedly eliminating a lot of the government waste and fraud, right? Supposedly saving billions of dollars. So why hasn't there been any discussion of an extreme tax cut? I haven't heard anything on that. Have you?
No, I haven't. No, and there was a talk about giving people like a DOGE dividend where maybe
I don't want that. I want a tax cut.
Amen. Well, and here again, this is not a simple answer, Rob, and I know a lot of people aren't going to like this answer, but we have a monster government now that spends trillions of dollars every year, that now literally is paying $1 trillion a year just in interest on the debt. And we cannot, unfortunately, easily shut that down. And it goes back to the monetary system. Again, I know this is complicated, and I know there's not like a simple soundbite, but we have a monetary system that requires ever increasing currency creation, which requires ever increasing government spending to keep the whole machine going. And so what would happen if the government were to say, we're going to drastically cut spending, which they need to, and we're going to drastically cut taxes to deal with that, is the economy would be sucked into a black hole, because the money would be sucked out of the economy, or new money wouldn't be coming into the economy. And what people don't understand is that we owe far more money than actually exists. Okay. And I alluded to this earlier. When money comes into circulation, almost always it comes into circulation as debt. And the Federal Reserve that creates that money out of nothing does not create the interest on the debt. So if you boil it down to just a very simplistic model, let's say the government wants to have $100 so that they can pay their employees. Well, there's no money. So the Federal Reserve says, all right, we'll print you $100. We'll loan it to the federal government at interest. Let's just say it's a reasonable 5% interest rate. Again, they created this money out of nothing. Now the federal government prints a bond worth $100 plus promises to pay $5 worth of interest on that bond. Well, what were to happen if the government were to vacuum up that $100, pay it back to the Federal Reserve? We would still owe them $5. And there'd be no money left in the economy. So everybody who owes money on their mortgage, every company that owes money to the bank, every governing institution, every state that owes money, all of that would get sucked into a black hole. And the Great Depression was a little bit of a taste of that, right? When they shrunk the money supply just a little bit by raising up interest rates, what happened is the economy got sucked into a black hole. And so we're in that position right now. I do not envy Donald Trump. I think what he needs to do is have a frank conversation with the American people about this pickle that we find ourselves in. Of course, they need to cut spending, and of course, they need to cut taxes. But the reality is, if they were to do that without addressing the monetary system that we have, it would have the economy sucked into a black hole. And there are other reasons for that as well, right? You look, for example, at the way GDP is calculated, which I taught economics for 12 years. And so this is one of the things I would teach to my students. GDP, people think of it as like this objective measure of value, how big of an economy is. Well, it's an arbitrary definition that was created by economists. It includes investment spending, consumption spending, exports minus imports, and then government spending. So what would happen if Donald Trump and Congress were to say, at the next budget, we're going to shave $1 trillion off of this budget? Well, that would result in $1 trillion less in government spending, which would be minus $1 trillion on the GDP numbers. You get two quarters of reduced GDP, you're in a recession. Donald Trump caused a recession. See, we told you, crazy government policies by this orange Cheeto man. Now we're all doomed. And of course, again, we're in this really difficult position now where if we don't cut spending and we don't cut taxes, the whole system's going to collapse. But if we do cut spending and we do cut taxes, the whole system's going to collapse. So the only way out of this is, I think, to have a frank conversation with the American people about the monetary system. We never had an income tax system like this, at least for a sustained period of time, until the Federal Reserve was born. Notice we got the Federal Reserve and the income tax in the same year, 1913. That was not a coincidence. They needed the income tax to be able to siphon the wealth out of the American people and hand it over to the bankers. And so if you're going to get rid of one, you've got to get rid of the other. And this is one problem masquerading as two problems. And it's a very unenviable position to be in as president or as a Republican member of Congress, understanding this, but yet not being able to necessarily do anything about it without causing a catastrophic economic crisis.
Excellent points, Alex. It sounds to me like we are headed for a great reset economically. Now, I'm no economist, and maybe this is a stupid question. I'm not an economist. In fact, economics was my worst class in college, but it wasn't my fault because we had our professor was from Egypt and he spoke very poor English and no one understood him and most of the students fell asleep. So anyway, but is money even real? You know, why is it that we even need to pay taxes at all when the government continues to operate in bankruptcy and continues to pass continuing resolutions for even more money, not to mention all the money they seem to just pull out of thin air and send overseas or for whatever pet project they want to fund. It seems like the enormous tax bills we pay are just a drop in the bucket anyway, compared to what the government spends.
They absolutely are.
It's all just digits.
It is. And again, we have a private cartel of bankers masquerading as a federal agency with the power to create currency out of nothing and then lend it to the government and lend it, at least for the short term, to commercial banks. And at this point now, over recent years, they now can even invest this new currency they're creating out of thin air into the stock market, right? So the whole economy is rigged at every level. If we had a legitimate government and if we had a legitimate economy, we wouldn't need to pay these kinds of taxes. In fact, America got along very well without these kinds of taxes for a very long time. But because of the nature of the monetary system, it necessitates this. Now, you asked a question that I think is really important. Is money even real? And In a sense, yes. In a sense, no. You know, money historically, if you read your Bible, the only real money that's talked about in the Bible is gold and silver, right? And people call gold and silver God's money. I like that term a lot. And gold and silver is real money in the truest sense of the term. It has an objective value, right? It doesn't have value because a government decreed it to have value. It has objective value. Silver and gold both have all kinds of usages in the economy. There is a built-in demand for both of those metals that is always there. There is not a built-in demand for paper money, right? And if you look around the world historically, paper money experiments always end in tragedy. I should have gotten some of my bills. I've got a whole bunch of money from Zimbabwe. I've got hundreds of trillions of dollars in Zimbabwe money. I have literally $100 trillion bills from Zimbabwe that they were printing like they were going out of style until the paper company told them, you can't pay us in Zimbabwe money anymore, and the whole thing collapsed. So real money is something that's objective. And there's another hidden tax here that you didn't talk about, Rob, that's actually one of the most oppressive taxes, and incidentally, one of the most regressive taxes. It hurts the poor and the middle class the most, and that is the inflation tax, right? The inflation tax is basically them stealing your money without even telling you they're doing it. And so let's say, hypothetically, I've worked really, really hard this year. I've saved $1,000. I go put that in my safe. And then the Federal Reserve decides on a whim that they're going to double the currency supply. Right? What happens to the value? And forget the scam that we mentioned earlier. Just objectively speaking, what happens to the value of the $1,000 that I put in my safe when the Federal Reserve decides to double the supply of money? Well, anybody should be able to tell you this. It's going to lose half of its purchasing power. Or said another way, they just taxed or stole half of my savings without ever passing a new law, without ever asking my elected representatives if we agreed to surrender this money. It's the very essence of taxation without representation. And again, the people this hurts the most are the poorest and the middle class. This is a steady mechanism for pumping wealth from the lower classes in America, from the middle classes in America, to the people connected to the crony money-making machine, the Federal Reserve, the mega banks, and the cronies of the government. So we're getting taxed in ways that people can't even begin to comprehend, in some ways more significantly than the taxes you actually see, right? When you send in that check to the government at the end of the year on April 15th. So the scam, the fraud that we are being subjected to as Americans is orders of magnitude worse than even very aware people understand. And frankly, when you get into biblical terminology, I think the only way you can honestly refer to this stuff is theft. And as the Bible says over and over again, dishonest weights and measures are an abomination. This is dishonest weights and measures. This is usury on a scale never contemplated before the modern era.
Yeah, talking about inflation, I was thinking about when we were raising our kids, we'd go to the grocery store every week. And if we got to, you know, if we loaded the cart, so it's overflowing, you got to put stuff underneath and on top. And, you know, we get up there, and if it was over $100, we knew that we were, you know, we really bought a lot of stuff. We bought too much stuff. Now you walk out of the grocery store with two plastic bags and it's $100. So there's your inflation for you. Yeah. But, folks in the audience, if you have any questions or comments for Alex, raise your hand. And Ray just raised his hand, so come on in.
Yeah, Alex, what's your take on President Trump's proposal about abolishing the Internal Revenue Service, replacing it with the External Revenue Service? Do you think that's feasible? Will it work? What's your take on that?
For a long time in this country, tariffs were the primary source of revenue for the federal government. And I would say tariffs are one of the least bad forms of taxes. Ultimately, it is still us that are going to pay. You know, the lefties have a point. When you impose tariffs on something, Americans are still paying those taxes, although we do share the burden somewhat with foreign producers. But there are some added benefits to the tariffs that I think are important. One of them, as Donald Trump has correctly pointed out, the international economic system has been rigged against the American middle class in every possible way. Where he's wrong is, you know, he portrays this as other countries taking advantage of the United States. I wish that were the case, because that would be easier to solve. The reality is people within this country designed the policies deliberately to deindustrialize the United States, to ship our productive capacity to communist China, to hollow out the middle class because of the principles that America was founded on. So I love the idea of abolishing the Internal Revenue Service, or as some people call it, the Infernal Revenue Service. I do think if we had a legitimate federal government that stuck to its constitutional limitations, it could easily be funded with just reasonable tariffs. I mean, you don't have to put 50% tariff or 100% tariff on anybody. You could do very reasonable tariffs, 10%, 20%, and that should be more than enough to fund the very few things that the federal government is authorized to do. And even some of those things, I think we ought to have a discussion. Do we really need a federal post office? You know, I think there's room for debate there. But I like the proposal. Whether it'll happen, I think, is a whole nother question. Not because it's not a good idea or it's not feasible, but because we have 50% of Americans who depend on federal largesse now. It's very difficult once you start a government program and get people dependent on it to take it away from them. We've got hundreds of trillions of dollars in unfunded liabilities that our politicians have promised to people, whether we're, and nobody wants to talk about this in Washington, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. We've been scammed on a massive scale, and nobody wants to admit that. Plus, we owe all this money to foreign governments. Whatever we owe to the Federal Reserve, I would cancel that immediately. That's a fraud, and I would nationalize that system instantly and forget that. But the reality is, if we were to do that, it would require some serious pain, some serious haircuts by some Americans who have become dependent on the federal government. It would unleash an incredible wave of prosperity. But to get 218 members of the House of Representatives to agree to that would be very difficult, especially when you consider the number of rhinos, Republicans in name only, in the Republican caucus. They would certainly join with Democrats to block this. So I think it's a worthy goal to push for. Whether I think it's feasible within the next 4 years, probably not. But over the long term, if there is a long term, that's absolutely the direction we should be moving in. And we've proven that it works.
The reciprocal, though, it seems like a good idea. If they're going to charge us 200%, we'll charge them 200%. I think that's fair.
I do, too. I think that's absolutely fair. And, you know, I'm not instinctively always and everywhere opposed to tariffs, as some economists are. A lot of these free trade economists, you know, they act like the sky is falling because we're imposing tariffs. I don't see it that way. I see it as a legitimate purview of government to be able to raise some revenue where necessary. It's an indirect tax. So it's not like, you know, we have to deal with the IRS every April 15th. So there are some very, very big benefits to that. We also are able to then impose some of that burden on foreign producers. And, you know, I think it's a very, very good overall goal. But beyond that, you know, we can't talk about these kinds of systemic changes to the tax system unless and until we deal with the systemic problems with the monetary system. So we're going to have to address the Federal Reserve. Nobody is willing to talk about it. Very few people understand it. This all may be coming to a head here very soon, but if we can get a legitimate monetary system and if we can get the federal government to at least pretend like it's going to behave constitutionally, we could very easily eliminate all income taxes and very easily fund everything needed from the federal government, including a very robust military, a very robust system of national security and defense with moderate tariffs.
All right. Anyone else in the audience, comments or questions? Otherwise, we will see if we can come back to you later, but now's your chance. Annie, come on in.
Thank you. This is a great show. With a federal government, you know, limited government, essential services, what do you propose would be the new government once, you know, all of the disassembly is finished, when all the systems are flushed out from top to bottom? What do you see as the end goal? What does our new government look like? I yield.
Well, thank you, Annie. What I would really like to see is a government that adheres to the Constitution. And you know, to be clear, I'm not one of those people who believes the Constitution was divinely inspired. I think if we look back and we're honest about it, The anti-federalists were right about a lot of things, right? The people who were warning about the U.S. Constitution were right in retrospect about a lot of what they warned about, that this was going to allow the creation of a national government that was going to usurp more and more power until it basically became our master. And of course, all those warnings have proven correct. But what I would like to see as a starting point is a recognition that most of what the federal government does today is unconstitutional. And this is not actually that complicated, right? Don't believe the lawyers. You don't have to go look at 200 years of case law to understand this. Just read your Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 lists the powers that we, the people, through our states, have delegated to our federal government. The federal government was a creation of we, the people, acting through the sovereign states. And they created an agent. The federal government is the agent of the people and the states. And we agreed to surrender a few responsibilities. And those, again, are listed very clearly in Article 1, Section 8. Those are the powers that Congress has. And, of course, all legislative powers, it says in the Constitution, are delegated to the Congress. That means none for the Supreme Court, means none for the president. So what are those powers? Well, I encourage people to read it. They can protect intellectual property, which I think is a good thing, right? We don't need 50 state offices for patents and trademarks and copyrights and things like that. I'm fine with the federal government operating an intellectual property system. In fact, I think it's been very helpful to our country, as they said in the Constitution, to promote the useful arts and sciences. Has it been abused? Absolutely. But I think that's a good thing for the federal government to keep doing. It also authorizes the federal government to keep and maintain a Navy. I think that's a good idea. If we end up in a war, we don't want to have to, you know, call up the governor of Wyoming and say, hey, man, you got any ships that you could lend us? So we've got a problem, right? So, yeah, sure. Let the federal government have a Navy and an Air Force now, right? Maybe extend that or maybe add an amendment to the Constitution, an Air Force, because we don't want to, you know, be scrambling for airplanes if a war were to break out. I frankly don't think we really need an army as it's currently constituted. The founding fathers were almost unanimous in their concern about a standing army. They believed in a militia system, very much along the lines of the Swiss system, where every man who is capable of bearing arms, typically between the ages of maybe 17 and, I don't know, 45, maybe 40, pick a number, would be expected to have a weapon, know how to use that weapon, and if ever called into service, would be available for that. And of course, that would be used very, very sparingly. We don't want Congress just willy-nilly going to invade Iraq or Afghanistan or Somalia or, you know, pick your country that needs more democracy or whatever. So there's a few things that the federal government could do. A post office, you know, back then there wasn't really any profit to be made in delivering a letter out to, you know, Timbuktu, South Dakota. And so they said, well, hey, we'll subsidize this a little bit through the federal government. Fine. You know, if we need a post office, fine. But again, the powers and responsibilities of the federal government are very clearly articulated in the Constitution. For anybody who didn't understand that, the founding fathers put in the 10th Amendment. Most of them said it's not even necessary. Nobody's going to be that dumb to have to be reminded of this. But they said that the powers not granted to the federal government under this Constitution are reserved for the states or for the people. In other words, no governmental power that was not specifically delegated to the federal government is authorized for the federal government to exercise. That means it's a power reserved for the state government or for the people. So if we could just get back to that basic understanding, the federal government is not here to be your babysitter or to fund your local government school. Sorry. It's not here to give you health care. It's not here to pay for your university. It's not here to bomb other peoples into submission. It's not here to operate a refugee resettlement program where we fly planes to the Middle East and bring them back full of Muslims. Shut all of it down, all of it. And again, that list, Article 1, Section 8, that's what I propose the federal government do. And to the extent that the American people think it ought to be doing something different, it's a good document. We have an amendment process. Article 5 of the Constitution details the two different ways to amend the Constitution. It's been amended dozens of times in the past. We could easily amend it again if we decide we do need a standing army, if we decide we really do want some particular program, a Social Security program, which I think was a terrible idea. But if we did decide as Americans, we want the federal government to run Social Security, we could delegate that power to the federal government through the amendment process. But if done in a constitutional way, that would reduce our tax burden by 80%, just, you know, pick a number. And it would make all of our lives better. It would result in a surge in economic productivity and wealth. And everybody all over the world would be better off as a result.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Alex, I said earlier that nothing would surprise me. There's one thing that would surprise me. If they were to do away with the IRS, that would surprise me. Just saying. Why don't we, Spencer, can we take a look at America's Debt Clock? I know a lot of you are aware of this, but some of you may not be. So this is actually, you can find it at usdebtclock.org. I wonder, can you zoom into that upper left-hand corner? Because these numbers are staggering. There you go. There's our national debt. Debt per citizen, 107,362. Debt per taxpayer, 323,049. That's all of us, folks. I don't have that kind of money. I don't know about you, but...
Nope. Yeah. Neither do my six kids. So this is an abomination. Right? And eventually the chickens are going to come home to roost. And I should add, Rob, I mentioned it briefly. This doesn't even include the unfunded liabilities. The federal government has promised hundreds of trillions, the best estimate I've seen, $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. These are liabilities that the federal government has already incurred that they do not have the money to pay for. So when you add that to the national debt, we're talking maybe $250 trillion for every that it needs to be paid by every American. And you know, without trying to sound ridiculous here, there's absolutely no way that's going to be paid. So this is going to result in a default of some sort. It'll either be they're going to print money until it's worthless and everybody will get worthless dollars. You'll get a Social Security check for $1,500 and you won't be able to buy a piece of bread with it. Or they'll just outright say, we can't make good on these obligations. So, folks, nobody in politics will ever tell you this. It's considered the third rail. If you're depending on the government to take care of you, you had better start making alternative plans.
Well, there's something new on there now. It's called the Doge Clock. What is that? Is that what we are supposedly saving? Yeah, it says savings per taxpayer. So,
well, and that hasn't been cut out of the budget yet. Just to be clear, that money is still in the federal government. They may not be sending it to the particular bureaucracy or the crazy activist group that was spending it, but that the federal government has still collected all that money. Those appropriations have still been authorized by Congress, and so unless and until Congress comes back when they do the next budget and say, we're cutting all this and giving the money back, those aren't real savings yet. That's just money that's still sitting in the federal government. So,
what did the Fed do before we had the federal income tax? It was basically tariffs, right?
That's right. That was the primary source of revenue for the federal government. But again, it was much smaller, so it didn't need that much money.
Yeah. But it's definitely a doable thing, again now,
absolutely,
isn't it?
We would all be better off. Even the people who are listening to me right now in horror, thinking, I paid into Social Security all my life. I know it. And frankly, as Congressman Ron Paul has said many times, people who have been duped into becoming dependent on this system, people who've paid into the system all their lives with the expectation that they were going to get it, they have to be made whole as best as we possibly can. But what we don't need to do is keep adding new liabilities. Right now would be the time to say, look, if you're under X age, pick an age, I don't know, 45 or 40 or even 50, just pick a number so that we can start digging out of this hole. Say, look, you need to start saving money for your own retirement. Right? And the reality is, if the federal government wasn't scamming us with Social Security, if they had just allowed us to invest that money, it would be worth 8 to 10 times what we're supposedly getting in Social Security right now. So this would be a better deal for everybody. I know a lot of people are dependent on it now. They've been paying in their whole life. So we've got to do that. But yes, The real answer here is to go back to what we had before, where the federal government had a few and defined powers. And if you really think the government ought to be taking care of people, which is not a biblical idea, but if you really think that, the proper place for that to take place under our system, for now at least, would be the state level. And if we want to have the federal government do that, we need to have a robust national discussion about it. We need to properly amend the Constitution using one of the two methods outlined in Article 5. And until then, I think we need to plan to be shutting all this down.
Yes, absolutely. So our system of progressive taxation on income, it seems to be more of a way of social engineering than anything else. It's a way to control and enslave people. Is there any hope for phasing this out? Things like, it seems like the flat tax or the federal sales tax ideas, they never got any traction at all.
Yeah. Sales tax, again, I say, is one of the least bad forms of taxes, right? And I taught about this a lot in economics classes, right? Every kind of tax is going to impose a deadweight loss on the economy, which is lost production, a misallocation of resources, beneficial transactions that would have occurred that are not going to occur as a result of this particular policy. And so phasing out the income tax would be a very, very good idea. In fact, a necessary idea. And then replacing it with, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the fair tax either. There are a number of other proposals. I do think tariffs would be more than enough to cover all of the legitimate functions of the federal government. I just had a guy on one of my shows, Liberty Report, just last week. He had an interesting proposal. His name was Stephen Redden. He's the founder of Now Tax USA, where he calls for what he describes as a broad-based sales tax. And so this would be a very minuscule tax on all sales happening up and down the economy. And he's done the calculations and says that would be more than enough to fund the federal government. You know, I think sales tax is problematic, but less problematic than an income tax. And I would remind people, too, this is a subject that doesn't come up much anymore. Karl Marx was one of the leading advocates of a progressive tax on income, not because he loved the poor, not because of the, because he thought it would help to eventually abolish private property, which is an institution that God himself ordained when he said, thou shalt not steal. So the progressive income tax was always a tool for tyranny. And it goes hand in hand with, as Karl Marx said, a monopoly on currency and credit. So these are two tentacles of the same machine that was always intended to reduce mankind to absolute slavery. And we need to understand the income tax in that way. It's not just a bad policy idea. It's a weapon in the hands of totalitarians to undermine freedom, to undermine the family, to undermine private property, and ultimately to undermine God's moral order.
It absolutely is a weapon. And so a couple of years ago, we had 87,000 new IRS agents hired, and they were armed. So you want to talk about a weapon. Why do they need to be armed?
Very good question. And the reason why they need to be armed is because they expect to be doing a lot more intrusive audits on Americans. And they expect a lot more resistance because people are getting fed up with this. So it's coming to a head. I've been very pleased to see Donald Trump raising these issues. We've had several high-level people in his administration talk about his desire to go back to a gold standard. And it's not just talk, by the way. Trump has made some really concrete moves in the right direction on both the monetary system and on the tax side. He tried to put Judy Sheldon to the Federal Reserve Board, a hardcore advocate of honest money, gold in our currency system. So I think we have a historic opportunity right now to make some significant changes. And as soon as we get done with this interview now, I'm about to send in a huge investigative report that I've been working on for a year, Rob, about state level efforts to bring gold into circulation as a transactional currency at the state level. Arkansas just yesterterday passed the bill overwhelmingly, unanimous in the state Senate, all but one voting in favor of it in the Arkansas House. Texas has a bill to do this. Utah passed unanimous in the House, almost unanimous in the Senate. It was vetoed by the governor last week, but they're plotting a veto override as we speak. So these are some really, really significant things happening at the state level and at the federal level that are really unprecedented in my lifetime, at least. And so we should really try to take full advantage. And you mentioned, Rob, that we might be headed toward a great reset. I do think we're going to see some, maybe unprecedented is the right word, unprecedented developments in the economy. And that could lead to either really good things or really bad things. I think the unprecedented things in the economy that I imagine are coming are going to be very unpleasant for a lot of people. How we respond to them is then the big question. Are we going to take this opportunity to reform the monetary system, to go back to a system of sound, honest money, reduce the size and the scope of government, reduce these onerous, oppressive taxes? Or are we going to let the evildoers behind the Great Reset and the Build Back Better and the Green New Deal scam and all the rest of it have their way and impose higher taxes, global fiat currency, or at least regional fiat currency as a stepping stone to global currency? Because those are the choices before us. We're headed to a fork in the road. We're getting there probably soon. And we can only go one of two ways. We can't have it both ways. Either we're going to move back in the direction of biblical values, godly understanding of the purpose of government, honest money, or we're going to move in the direction of global tyranny we've never seen before in human history. So folks, pay attention.
Well, you know, JFK suggested fixing things with the Federal Reserve, and 5 months later, you know what happened. You sent me a note about property taxes at the state level, and I wasn't sure what you wanted to discuss on that, but we know that property taxes at the state level primarily fund, well, at the local level even, primarily fund our public schools, and those property taxes never go down. But what did you want to bring out about that?
Oh, I mean, we can say so many things about that. First of all, I'll say we would all be better off if they took our property tax money and dug a big hole and put the money in there than accepting this monstrous system that we, I think, very euphemistically refer to as an education system. What's happening here is not education at all. It is the discipling of our children, Antichrist discipling of our children, in doctrines of demons. And I mean that in the most literal sense. I've got the receipts. I can prove it. And so
let me just interrupt you quickly, Spencer. If you'd put Alex's book up on the screen for folks, because we also want to talk about that. There we go. Okay, go ahead, Alex.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so that's my new book. It was released last year, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And what I show is that the government school system was created by people whose primary objective was to turn our people away from God, away from the Bible, away from the principles outlined in the Bible, and toward a utopian, collectivist, antichrist worldview. And that is indisputable. It is absolutely indisputable. We have smoking gun primary source documents proving that all of the key men who built the, and I know this is offending a lot of people. Sorry, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you the truth. We've got smoking gun primary source evidence proving that that was the intention of these people. So with that in mind, that makes the issue of property taxes even more serious, right? And so right off the bat, we can say, I think property taxes are wrong. They're illegitimate. There's no way that somebody should have to pay rent to the government for the rest of their lives. And then their children should have to pay rent to the government for the rest of their lives to fund government, regardless of what it was paying for, right? But when you add insult to injury and consider the fact that they are teaching abominations to our children under the guise of education with that money they're collecting through our property taxes, it is, I think, one of the most evil things happening in our country right now. I was very pleased to hear my governor, Ron DeSantis, propose an end to property taxes. I just spoke yesterday with the president of the Senate in Wyoming. They're doing massive, massive property tax cuts there. But ultimately, I think our goal needs to be zero property taxes. And part of that means we have to start thinking biblically about education and family. Education is a family. It's a parental responsibility. Discipleship, it's the job of parents. The Bible never gives the civil government authority over the education and discipling of your children. So we need to go back to the Word of God on this. If we got rid of government schools, we wouldn't need property taxes, and all of us would be better off because of it.
Well, yeah. And, you know, a lot of what government is doing, and supposedly with our tax money, but I don't think our tax money really matters to them because they just create it out of thin air anyway. But a lot of what government's doing should be being done by the church, correct?
Absolutely. No question.
You know, there's a church on every corner, and they sit empty 5 days a week, and they've got classrooms. A lot of them have gymnasiums. They have everything that you need to operate a school. I have long wanted to see homeschool co-ops formed because there's a lot of homeschoolers. They can come together. They can take turns teaching. You know, it would be so easy for churches to take this particular aspect on, and yet they won't. We actually looked into it when we had our ministry center building. I looked into starting a homeschool co-op, and it turns out in Wisconsin, if you have more than three families gathered together for homeschooling, you automatically become a public school. So now you have to jump through all these hoops in order to get qualified. And anyway, so that's one of the reasons. Again, it's bureaucracy and government red tape, but
I agree with you 100%, Rob. And I actually lead as a volunteer a ministry that's focused on this. It's called Public School Exit. We help families and churches come up with an exit plan to get their children out of these government indoctrination camps. And to your point, that's exactly what we do, right? My wife and I, we homeschool our children. I wouldn't trade it for the world. You could put a gun to my head. I still wouldn't give you my children to send into these camps. And a local church here, we have the Classical Conversations Co-op. It's a wonderful program. I actually serve as a senior fellow there. We've got 135,000 students across this country and meeting in co-ops and communities all across the country. And there's so many options like that, that there's no longer, I think, any excuse for Christians not to take the plunge. Jesus said it very clearly. You're either with me or you're against me. And we all understand that the public schools are not with Christ. The godless understand that. The pagans understand that. Even the Christians understand that, even though they may not want to admit it. That's not to say that there's no decent Christians in the school system. But it is way past time for families and churches to take charge here and say, we are not going to allow this anymore. So look, like 80% of Christian children from Christian homes after 12 years in a public school are going to leave the church and they're going to leave the faith. So this is an existential crisis for us. And I mean, just go back to the Word of God again. I keep saying this. I feel like a broken record. But God tells us everything we need to know about how to educate our children. And it starts with some very basic principles. Proverbs 1:7, Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's the beginning of knowledge. Everybody listening to my voice right now knows there is no fear of the Lord being instilled in children in public schools, where they're spending 5 days a week, 6, 7, 8 hours a day, sometimes more, almost the entire year. And you expect they're going to get wisdom and knowledge when you know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. So a lot of people are deceiving themselves here, Rob, and I don't mean to sound harsh or judgmental, but the reality is we are really hurting our children. We are hurting ourselves, and it's just got to stop.
Well, you know, so many families feel like they need that second income so they can't stay home and raise their kids. But that second income is really getting just sucked up by the government, by taxes, taxation.
That's right.
So anyway, we have about 4 minutes left. Anyone in the audience, comments or questions? Now is your chance. Bruce, come on in.
So what would our alternate currency be if the dollar is falling?
Well, it's a good question. A lot of these states are working to make gold and silver back into legal tender. A lot of them have already passed laws doing that. Now they're trying to make it transactional. But again, the IRS here is standing in the way because they treat gold and silver as an investment. And so if your dollar loses 50% of its value and your gold stays the same, the federal government will say, ooh, you had a huge gain on your gold and silver investments. No, you didn't. The gold and silver is worth the same as it was yesterday. You could buy just as many houses, just as many cars, just as many suits. But now you got to pay capital gains tax to the IRS. So I think we need to move back toward a system of sound money as outlined in the Bible, gold and silver. But we need the IRS, we need the Trump administration to get the federal government out of the way to make that possible. And in fact, that's what the Constitution says. Article 1, Section 10 says no state shall make anything other than gold and silver a legal tender in payment of debts. So this is, constitutionally speaking, very simple. We need to go back to real money that can't be printed out of thin air. And the best things historically, the best things biblically have always been precious metals.
All righty. Annie, come on back.
Yes, Alex, you had mentioned Dr. Judy Shelton and Trump trying to get her onto the Federal Reserve Board.
Oh, yep.
So my question is, I listen to her fairly often. I love her. She's one of the people where you have to listen to things twice to catch everything that she's saying. But she had mentioned probably about 3 months ago that they were working with new monetary policy to, whether it's gold or silver or other precious metal, to back the American dollar or to back our currency, whatever that may be in the future. But she mentioned, like, going back to, I think it was 1971 or 72, where the ounce of gold was valued at something like $34. And like today, I think it's like over $3,000 an ounce. So with that in mind, I mean, how do you think this is really going to actually raise what the U.S. has stored right now as gold, gold certificates? Will we raise that up to meet the $3,000?
Well, if we move in that direction, gold would have to be revalued at an astronomically high rate. 34 is not feasible. I don't even think 3,000 is feasible. I think when people figure out that there's a lot less gold than people think, the price is going to go through the roof. And I know we've only got a minute left, so we're not going to have too much time to get into this. But frankly, I don't even think the 1971 standard is good enough. Yes, Richard Nixon did sever the final link to gold in 1971. But even then, Americans couldn't trade their fiat money, their Federal Reserve notes, in for gold. And the Federal Reserve was printing way more money than they actually had gold to back it. And that's why eventually the peg came loose and why Nixon had to temporarily take us off it. So I think we need to go back way before 71, back to the free banking era, back before 1913. And thank you, Annie, for asking.
All righty. And once again, Alex's book is Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And his website is libertysentinel.org. Alex, thank you for being here. Appreciate it. It's always good to have you. And we missed you at the conference this year, but we had to change up our lineup a little bit. And hopefully, if we do another one, we'll ask you back. So,
thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate it. God bless you.
All right. So Dr. Mike will be with you next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks with Jamie Walden as my guest. And I thank you all again for tuning in. And please share this program, and I will see you in 2 weeks. God bless.